The following program is paid for by Little John Financial Services. The opinions and views expressed may not reflect those of Brook Communications, its affiliates, or its employees.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4. Every weekday, News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN brings you local information at 4 o'clock. Now presented by Little John Financial Services. It's David Little John with True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All right, gang. It is that time of the week. It is time for your favorite radio show. Of course, the True Wealth Radio Show on this, the greatest Tuesday of the week. And in studio with me today, Matt Dixon.
I'm here.
And Matt,
yep.
How much are we going to convince you to actually speak today?
My word count is like 300 words and then I'm out.
Gotcha. So this is kind of like if you pitched the day before
in
relief, but you're like, well, I mean, I shouldn't come in, but I still, if you need me.
But you do it for the team.
Oh, man.
Got a frog in the throat.
Yeah. Well, we're fighting off all kinds of chaos. So the first thing, I'm going to speak about something that is not on our agenda, but I'm just going to say it. Last week was really rough.
Yeah, it was.
It was a sad week. We were, you know, we had the show on Tuesday and then, of course, Wednesday. And then we had September 11th. And then we had, you know, all these things to remember. And it was a lot of tragedies that were either remembered or experienced, right? Mm-hmm. And it wasn't just an assassination. It was school events and it was, you know, train stabbings and there was all kinds of stuff. And it's just like, whoa.
Yeah.
And my sense is that there was a wake up call to all of us here in this country that freedom of speech is a really big deal. And there's this differentiation between violence where you physically harm people and people conflating words with violence and then justifying because of words, I could physically harm somebody else. And I think part of me just went like, oof. And I realized a lot of what we do on this show may be, it's fun, but sometimes I, in trying to not offend or trying to provide comfort to somebody else in a bad decision, we don't just call stuff out. You know, I see the Dave Ramseys of the world who kind of go, well, that's just dumb.
Yeah, the stupid move.
Yeah. And occasionally I do say something like that because there is such a thing as dumb, right? Or my favorite, I almost got in an argument, but I just realized it wasn't worth it. Somebody at one point said, well, there's no bad decisions, right? And it's like, because in that person's mind, it was this, that, and the other thing. And I thought about it for a second. I said, maybe you're right. Maybe there are no bad decisions, just bad people that make decisions. It's not a fun way to look at it at all. The reality is there are some decisions that hurt people and decisions that hurt yourself because you just don't have enough information. And it is not kind of me to not point something like that out.
Right.
And so I think it's incumbent upon all of us. You know, you got to start with truth. And I'm not saying we haven't been speaking the truth. Just expect it to come more straight at you. Like, we don't need to sugarcoat this sometimes. It just is. So That's my disclaimer. That being said, Matt, you have come up with a fun idea for today's show.
Yeah.
What was the inspiration for this?
You know, I don't even remember if I'm being honest, but
I can tell you part of it. When you sent me this list and said, how much of this do you think is true?
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, one of the things, I think it was like some headline article, but it was like, hey, what are the top 10, you know, most believed conspiracy theories in the land of, you know, the financial world that we live in? And so I was reading through these and I'm like, I wonder how many of these Dave believes, you know? And so I sent you the list and you're like, no, that doesn't sound true. No, not that one. But these ones do, you know?
Yeah.
And so it was kind of a fun deal where it's like, what? So
he sends me a list of 10 and I tell him 7 of them look pretty plausible.
Right. And that's actually quite a few. So I'm like, Dave, are you a you know, closet conspiracy theorist here?
And what was my response?
You're like, well, I can already prove one of these to you, like, with almost no evidence at all to be true. So is it actually a theory or is it just a fact?
Yeah. Well, I didn't prove it with no evidence. I think I proved it with lots of evidence and just said, well, is it a conspiracy if it's real?
Right.
Right. And then I also like to suggest that sometimes what we want to call a conspiracy is kind of the George Carlin theory. You don't have to have a whole lot of people in on a conspiracy if you have just a handful of people in control positions that benefit and their interests align, and they all kind of make decisions that align those interests. It can sure walk and talk like a conspiracy. So what's the difference?
Right.
Right. Well, in practical effect.
Yeah. And I think, why does it matter to listeners? What if you can then take some of these theories that sound pretty plausible or could be true, and then use those to your benefit as an investor?
Yeah. So can we address one of them that's not on the page right out of the gate?
Sure, go for it. What do you have in your mind?
So I'm going to ask you, is this just a conspiracy theory?
Okay.
Bunch of hoopla based in facts, logic, sound, not? What do you think about? Da-da.
I love things that are not on the script.
The efficient market hypothesis.
I think so. Basically, that hypothesis, the idea behind it is everything that is happening in the market is known, right?
Well, so priced, like, it. The price reflects everything that the market knows.
Right. So everything about the market is known, and therefore the price is reflected in that knowledge. Do I personally believe it? No, I don't think that I do. The reason for that being, I think that people are kind of unpredictable. And so people tend to act in like almost a herd mentality. Mm-hmm. And so they can go do something that's not rational for a long period of time. Like, I think GameStop would probably be a pretty good example of that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, everyone just piled in, and there was a large group of people that said, we're just never going to sell GameStop because it will go up forever. And they believed that to be true. And so you saw the price go up and up and up until it didn't. Right. And so it's like, if you believe in the efficient market hypothesis, you'd look at that and say, well, that's actually what the stock is valued.
I find the efficient market hypothesis. Now, first of all, let me say something too. You tend to sell the thing that you have to sell.
Right.
Okay. And that being said, we're not total subscribers to the idea that the markets are efficient.
No.
So expect us to kind of struggle with that, right?
Yep.
This, by the way, is the equivalent of when you kind of rat yourself out, or let's call it disclosure, right? If you have a conflict of interest or something like that, then you kind of lay it out there and say, it's easier if I just admit the areas where I could have a bias.
Sure.
But here's my issue. It's a little bit like some of the Greek literature when the oracle shows up and makes predictions, right? If you say something vague enough, you can interpret it in your favor whenever you need to.
Yeah.
And the efficient market hypothesis is kind of like, well, everything's known. And it's like, well, did it know that the markets were going to go bananas? It's like, well, yeah, it did, right? And well, what about when it ended? It's like, yep, that was the information that arrived at that point. I'm like, so nobody was fooled at all. It's like, nope, that's just the way the market works. You know, well, that's really interesting that you could have intraday swings of radical percentages that end up being, you know, millions to billions of dollars or more in some cases in market capitalization. And it's all because, well, you know, that market's super efficient. You know, it was just the information flow is moving. It's like, what if the information was just lies or rumors or, for that matter, manipulation?
Ooh, that was one of the ideas that I wanted to bring into the show today, was this idea or this theory of something called a short ladder attack.
So let's get to that.
Yeah.
I'll wrap up the idea, Brian. If you believe that the markets are efficient, a lot of what we're going to talk about is going to be kind of like, eh. So yeah, go buy an index. But here's the thing. If you have to consider, if everybody all became indexers,
right?
Like 100% of the market became an index, then we wouldn't have an index anymore, because we wouldn't have a market. If everybody agreed, that's not a market any longer, right? The marketplace is built on auctions and price discovery. If we all agree that the price is simply set at this, okay, and there's somebody out there that's going to say, well, yeah, but people need money at different times, and so some people have to buy and some people have to sell. So on balance, if there was a price, because everybody indexed, the market would create a whole new set of issues. Because people don't believe the market's efficient, and that in and of itself
is enough to make it not efficient.
Right?
Yeah.
All right. So, talk to me about short ladder attacks.
Yeah. I want to see if you think that this is like a real thing or not.
Okay.
So basically the theory is that you got all these big hedge funds out there, right? Mm-hmm. And that they're kind of colluding together by trading shares kind of back and forth at lower and lower prices to drive the price of a stock down and then scare the retail investor out of their position, right? Which mm-hmm. drives the price even lower. But what it does for them is it creates a cheap entry point. So it's kind of like a game of chicken, right? Where it's like, let's drive this thing lower. And eventually you're going to sell, making the price go even lower so that I can buy it back and then watch it recover.
So I think that this is probably somewhat real, plausible, right? Let's in the Mythbusters realm, right?
You're on
so
the
you
fence
have,
with this
so,
one.
So, but here's why it's plausible. It's like, how are you going to define some of the terms? Okay, like a short ladder attack. Do people trade back and forth amongst each other to manipulate? I don't think that you necessarily see who you're trading with. But what I do think is that there are a lot of trading algorithms that do what is called order book manipulation.
Talk about that.
So order book manipulation is... well, if any of you have ever put a limit order on a purchase or sell, right? You've predefined a size of the order and a time and price, right? Well, not time, rather. A price and a size of an order. But the time is undefined. It is if the market goes to this price point, then I want you to execute the order, okay? If that's the case, what you will see at times is players that are very, they're usually large capital players, and they're looking for points in the order flow where there's very few market participants, okay? Because imagine this. You've got a whole bunch of people trading 100 shares at a time, and you're lurking in the shadows coming in to buy 100 million shares. Then you can actually afford to sell to scare the market to drive it down more and more, because a lot of these players can see the order book. They can see how many people at the different prices want to limit order in or out of a position above or below. And they have algorithms that are counting what the orders look like compared to what they're trying to place. And then they're going to go in and they can buy up an entire block at once. And so you get these folks that are waiting for a thinly traded spot in the market to sort of swoop in
they're
and move the order book in
a
direction.
Because
they can overwhelm every other buyer or seller because they have so much more buying power or selling power. Usually it's buying power, right? You can't force the market to buy things that you want to sell. But you can buy up everything if you wanted to. And so you could get a rip down by saying, well, I'll buy this person's offer, but there's nobody willing to sell above it, but they're selling below it, and I will buy my way down, you know, for emergencies to get out, that kind of thing. So they'll trip limit orders on purpose just to stop people out and move the book down and buy at a lower price.
Right. And then do you ever see it going the other direction where they're using the trading to just keep pushing it higher and higher and higher?
Yeah, you can see something similar too. But if it's just going higher and higher, like that was what GameStop was. Nobody was willing to sell. And so if you wanted out, you just had to pay more and more and more to get to a price that somebody said, all right, that's high enough, I'll sell, right?
Yeah.
So if nobody's willing to sell, you can get into like a short squeeze type environment, but that's not really a short ladder attack. A short squeeze is I have to buy this stock to cover a margin call, and there's nobody willing to sell it, so I got to pay up.
So I have an interesting theory, and this could be complete, you know, garbage, but follow me and see if you can make
follow
heads
the garbage.
Go. Yeah, follow the garbage trail. So what I think might happen in the future is we continue to see computers get more and more involved in the trading process, right?
They're already most of it.
Right. Yeah. But like as AI continues to learn and it gravitates more away from a large language model to a deep thinking model, right? Imagine Fidelity or Vanguard or BlackRock or whoever, they have this computer system. How are they going to program it? What's the objective? Maximum gains, right? In theory, follow me.
Yeah.
Like if you have this computer that's trading, what you're programming it to do is to go out and make money. You're not ever going to tell it to lose money. So if the entire marketplace largely is run by a group of computers that want to make money, how are they going to trade? They're going to be biased to the buy side instead of the sell side because
well,
if
not
the
com- so.
Well, see, I think that it might.
Not if you can short the positions.
Well,
if you can play both sides. You can buy and sell. You can take out smaller players.
You could, right? But, like, I'm thinking, what if the computer system from Vanguard and then the one from Fidelity and the one from BlackRock are kind of starting to collaborate in a sense? They
well,
could just
it's
say...
it's not a market anymore.
Well, is it out of the realm of possibility that they could kind of collude at that level where they then just say, we're going to buy and buy and buy and buy and drive this thing up because... if the market skyrockets, it's in our best interest because it makes us look good.
So, possibly. We can talk about... I don't think I'm going to spend the whole show on this. Is it possible? Sure. But more than likely, these are competing interests and not aligned interests. So instead, what you get is malicious attacks on each other trying to spoof each other. What AI has shown historically is that it will try to be clever and outflank
Interesting.
Its competitors. But anyway, look, okay. I'm looking at the clock. We're running long. We got to grab a break. So let's do this. We'll do that. We will come back. And there's a bunch more like crazy ideas about what's driving the market. And that's kind of what we're going through today. And then we'll see if we can.
We've also got a lot of comments in the section.
All right. Well, that'll be fun. We'll talk about those comments next when we come back to you. Stick around. I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
You got True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Hey, gang, welcome back to the True Wealth Radio Show. Dave Littlejohn in studio with
Matt Dixon.
Okay, remember, you guys can get caught up on the podcast. Today we are talking about conspiracy theories in the market, and do these things hold water? Are they potentially real, or is this just a bunch of shenanigans, or do we even know? Right. So what else is on our list today, Matt?
Well, one of the big ones was this concept of the dark pool and our orders being sold so that these hedge fund managers and whoever wants to, you know, have a little bit of a competitive edge, they get to see it before it happens.
So I don't know if that's my understanding of a dark pool. First of all, it sounds like a evil superhero or something, right? Like, okay. That's the bad guy. Okay, a dark pool is a pool of assets that's being traded and you cannot see the activity.
Okay. Right?
That's really what a dark pool is. And so the dark is that you can't see into it. Most of the time, you're supposed to be able to see the transactions in a marketplace.
You're saying, like, if Warren Buffett wants to buy 100 million shares of XYZ company, you get to know about it.
Well, sort of. I mean, that it doesn't generally get reported in advance.
Right.
But it does get reported in things like the 10Q filings and so forth, where large institutions have to report their activity, right? But what we're used to seeing is the secondary market where things trade on an exchange and you see an order book and you get to see the trades, or at least the most recent trade. So who bought, well, you don't know who, but you know a certain amount at a certain price just happened. And then the next trade is whatever the difference between the buy, the bid and the ask are, right? The bid is what people are willing to pay for it. The ask is what people are willing to sell it for.
Okay.
And whatever the last trade is how the stock is currently valued. Okay. And so if you got lots and lots of people trading, then you sort of arrive at the price between the bid and the ask, and that's what you see. Okay. The dark pool environment, you're not going to see all that. Okay. So that's
right.
What happens. You're not going to see the bid and the ask and what happened. There's something called third tertiary market, right? So this, if you have the secondary market, the tertiary market is where institutions trade with each other.
And is it not showing up on the exchange because they're not trading the shares on the same?
It often doesn't, and it doesn't have to trade during typical market hours per se. If you have two institutions, let's say Vanguard and Fidelity have mutual funds, and they need to exchange a block of, you know, $1 billion of Microsoft. One fund wants out and another fund wants in. Right, they might do a direct exchange with each other, and they'll broker that deal directly between each other to swap inventory. Well, that's not happening on an exchange with an intermediary. That's a
right.
Different kind of transaction. And I mean, at that level, institutional trade, we don't even deal with that in our firm. So I'm just talking about theoretical. But dark pools tend to be things that are trading. Okay, and what you were hinting at, I think, is. The idea that certain dark pools, like certain institutional players, hedge funds, and so forth are trying to monitor the order flow from other places, and they're trying to get ahead of order flow. That happens in real life in two ways. When they're buying order flow to see where the retail investor is putting their money, and two is in high frequency trading pools, where you're seeing the traders see the trades coming in and they're trying to place micro trades in front of them by looking at, hey, I see this trade across the street happening and I'm going to get into it before they do.
Right. And so, they might only make fractions of a penny, but
yeah,
if
but
they
you
can
do it
a
bunch of times, and you know, you can still be really profitable by making tons of micro trades really, really fast.
Yeah.
And so that's what high frequency trading is. It's oftentimes, you know, multiple trades in less than a second.
Right.
You know, or certainly in, you know, we're talking seconds, not minutes, to make lots of trades. So, yeah, flip in, flip out, flip in, flip out. And that is, you know, you're making money on the froth or the churn of the marketplace. And they are trying to do it in many cases ahead of the order flow of retail investors.
Right.
So those are not really conspiracy theories. Those things
you're
really
like,
happen.
It just happens.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Now, here's one that might land more in conspiracy land.
Okay.
What about the theory that gold prices are suppressed by the central banks kind of pushing gold down by overnight markets kind of being thinly traded? So the theory is they want gold to not go up too much because then people might lose faith in, like, the dollar, for example. So the central banks do whatever they can behind the scenes to suppress the value of gold so that you have more faith in the U.S. dollar. Does that sound more like a conspiracy theory?
Does to me. I mean, because I look at that and go, well, what would that be? If the market's thinly traded, you can actually move the price more, not less.
Hmm.
Right? If you want to slow gold down, then what do? You know, regulate it.
Yeah.
And there's already a lot of interesting regulations around gold just from being able to assess purity, for example. Like, what happens if you have physical gold? And, you know, you bring the gold in, you got to confirm that it is what it's supposed
to
be.
My question would be, how would you even do it, right? Like, if you say you are the central bank, pretend for a second you are. If you're the central bank, how could you manipulate gold prices in any way? Like, what would be, how would you go about it?
You could lie. I mean, if it's manipulation anyway, you could just, like, fake the buys and sells to, you know, so they're not real trades. But that's, I don't think that's what they're doing. I'm just
right.
Like, you asked me, how could you do it? I said, well, lie. That's one of the main ways that you could do it if you're talking conspiracy. Otherwise, you become the largest broker. So you're the one bringing money in or out with it.
We're getting some comments on YouTube around this. So for people that are listening, I think we've got one listener saying, no, this is a real thing. So what I want is for that person to drop a comment in here and tell me, how do you think that gold price is being
suppressed?
Maybe
I should say, do I think that the U.S. central bank is doing it? Probably not. Chinese central bank? Somewhat, yes. Because one of the theories is a path to global reserve currency is to sort of corner the market on precious metals, right? So if you start to amass the most gold, then you can become the new reserve currency because you've got... You're the least
But wouldn't
least
that,
fiat.
In theory, drive the price of gold up if you keep amassing it more and more? Like, we know that China's doing it, right? They've accumulated, like, 2,500 tons of gold in the last year.
Yeah, probably would. But that's the question is the theory that gold should be suppressed to keep the dollar stable? Or, you know, and if so, by whom? The answer is, I don't know, but I don't know how it would happen.
I don't know either. But maybe we just need to look into it more. It's a big, I don't know. Or maybe it doesn't matter because it's going to be what it's going
to
be.
I don't
think
it matters as much as people want to believe. I think there's a lot of folks that cling to the idea of gold because it's historically been what it is. And I will tell you that what keeps the U.S. as the reserve currency more than gold is the U.S. military. When you're a military hyperpower and you can say, we've all agreed to use this currency, right?
Right.
And then everybody goes, like you. Right. And so that's sort of how it goes down, is that most of the Western world rents their military from the United States.
Interesting.
You know, or they keep a small military presence and alliances with the United States, which is a military hyperpower, and the U.S. dollar, which is also the largest currency by a landslide, is much easier to trade in and out of because there's enough of it in circulation. You know, these countries that have really small economies, they don't have enough currency to actually accommodate being a reserve currency. And then you talk about, well, what about China? It's this huge population. Said, yeah, and everything works except for the part where they lie. Okay. Right. So nobody trusts them to be the reserve currency. So anyway, I don't know why we would try to suppress the price of gold. It seems to me more like we want gold and the amount that we inflate our currency to stay in parallel.
That part would make sense, like wanting it to stay close. Like, yeah. I could see that. But I mean, the theory of like not letting gold get, you know, you don't want, like, if I'm the government, right, or I'm the Federal Reserve or the central bank or whoever, I don't necessarily want gold to appreciate at a rate that is higher than any other asset class.
Correct.
Because then we have a big problem. People are going to be putting all of their money into gold.
Well, I think we have another problem too. If gold goes up significantly,
time and time again,
and it's supposed to be an inflation hedge, then if gold is going down, does that mean the dollar is going down too?
Right.
That's a deflationary pinch. And so you don't want an asset that is supposed to be fairly representative,
exactly,
of your currency,
yeah,
to be out of control.
Right, because it risks the dollar.
Right.
So it has to, so maybe there is some validity. I don't know how they do it.
I'm not saying the idea is not relevant. I'm saying, right, I don't know how you'd execute that because it's a physical asset. I'm saying, well, who's controlling the supply of it or not? And so, again, it comes down to, do you push narratives to try to sway,
right,
opinion? Which that may happen, right? I don't know. But
sure.
At this point, you know what the difference between conspiracy and reality is typically?
All I know is that when there's enough money involved, especially on a global scale, people will get very creative in the ways that they go about, you know, either manipulating or executing certain things in order to stabilize. So I'm like, I don't know enough to know. So I'll just say, I don't, yeah, know on number four.
I'm going to punt. And with
me
that,
too.
I'm going to take a break because here we are at long past the hour. We got to do that. So stick,
okay,
around. When we come back, more conspiracies that stump Matt. And,
yeah,
I pretend like I know. Stick around. I'm Dave Littlejohn.
All right. And Matt Dixon.
And you got True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All right, gang, welcome back to the True Wealth Radio Show. Dave Littlejohn, joined in studio today by
some crazy conspiracy theorist.
Yeah, absolutely. So,
yeah.
And reminder, we are live on YouTube if you want to check that out, and you can fire questions at us, and it goes bananas. So, anyway, we are covering conspiracy theories mostly because Matt has fun with this.
Yeah, I do.
But why not?
I love flirting the line with reality and fiction.
Yeah. And, well, we did not answer the question. What's the difference between a conspiracy and the truth?
Time.
Yeah, about 6 months.
Yeah.
So, I mean, at least that seems to be the case in the realm of politics. But we... Now, who are we kidding? I talk about that crap all the time, but not today. We're sticking with our conspiracy theories. What else you got for me?
It's called the index inclusion pump.
This is totally real.
You believe so?
Oh, yeah.
So basically, it's just companies lobby to join big indexes like the S&P 500, and then they get a little bit of kickback.
No, I don't know they get a kickback, but... I mean, this is a real thing. So, case in point.
You don't think the ETFs give them a kickback for pushing the index?
No, I'm going to make a... Well, not that I've heard of. I haven't heard of, like, some kind of kickback. But I will tell you that if you consider this for a minute, okay? I'm going to give you a real example, not a recommendation. Go look up HOOD, right? This is the ticker symbol for Robinhood. Robinhood is mostly a trading platform for do-it-yourself investors. They have been growing very, very rapidly, and they have been trying to get included in the S&P 500. So every time the S&P 500 has a potential rebalancing event where they kick things out and they add new things in,
right,
Robinhood experiences a price run-up because investors have been presumably buying this stock in anticipation that it will get included and all the big indexes will have to buy it.
If that's what we're talking about, then it's not, it's no longer just like a theory. It's just a known fact, right? Like,
yes,
if you get into the S&P 500,
a bunch of indexes and government pension programs all have show up and buy it because you're part of the index.
Well,
so
and
you get
obviously,
a huge increase in demand.
Obviously, a company's going to lobby to try and get into the S&P 500 because...
Well, it's not just a lobby thing. It's not like you get a vote to get in. You have to reach a certain market cap.
Well, that's
right?
part of it,
and
right?
And so Robinhood's trying to reach that market cap. But investors know if we drive the price of the stock up, the market capitalization of the company is reflected as higher. And so they try to move the stock higher before the S&P readjusts. So they're trying to game it to get it included, because if they're successful, a huge wave of buying shows up and their stock gets lifted even more.
So you could see a lot of insider buying at that point.
You could see insider buying. You could see a lot of small retail traders trying to do this too. Right? You could even see hedge funds do it because they could potentially buy this asset. Where you maybe don't see it as much is really, really big mutual funds and things like that, where they go, well, you know, we have so much money, we come in to buy Robinhood and, you know, we need to put a material chunk to work. We want to buy, you know, 1% of our, you know, what happens if you're Fidelity and you've got a mega fund that's got $35 billion in assets?
Well,
and Robinhood's valued at, I don't know, $3 billion. And so like 10% of the company's $300 million. $300 million's not enough to move the needle for you, right? Like Berkshire Hathaway wouldn't bother.
Sure. Didn't Tesla, before it joined the S&P 500, didn't it have like a huge rally that helped get it in?
I'm sure it did.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, this is a mechanics thing. So that's why it's not really a conspiracy theory. It's the mechanics of the market.
Sure. Well.
You know, if you're going from retail to institutional trading, the jump from retail to institutional can be big.
Sure.
And so that's the issue at play there.
All right.
All right. Tell me more.
What about insider Fed leaks?
I don't know. It's probably true, though, right? I mean, like, we get stupid leaks all the time. I mean, an anonymous source from the White House says, like, really? You think that you can get dozens and dozens of people that are in the ecosystem of the Federal Reserve to all be airtight on their discussions?
No.
Man,
especially if they're getting paid under the
table. Well, especially if it's like, what if you have signals just with your behaviors and somebody's watching because, all you have to do is, you know, reach in your pocket with your left hand instead of your right hand. Like, well, how are you going to figure that out?
Is that why they picked Jerome Powell for the job? Because that guy is just like no emotion, just flat as a board every single time he's asked a question.
Find me a Fed chair that has emotion. I don't think that's how that works.
I would be such a horrible Fed chair.
Janet Yellen was Miss Personality. Ben Bernanke was Mr. Personality. Alan Greenspan was Mr. Personality. I mean, like, you know, all of these guys.
Can you imagine if I
was
the Fed chair?
Mr. Personality. He's like, there's... come on.
Can you imagine, though, if I was the Fed chair? Matt, are you going to cut rates? And it's like,
you'd just be like, give me some Skittles and let's do this thing.
Yeah.
Like, what?
He'd know my agenda like 9 months in advance.
Yeah. He'd be like, well, what's going to be good for my portfolio?
So I'm terrible at keeping a secret. It's like my
kryptonite.
It's horrible. Like, I'll buy Cheyenne something for Christmas and it's like, I got to wait 3 months to give it to, and then I just, within the first 24 hours, it's like, I bought you this thing. And she's like, what? Like, I can't keep a secret. I'm horrible at it. It's my, can't do it.
So what you do is you need a dark pool where you say, here's things I'm considering. Somebody else go buy it and hide it and then give it to me right before Christmas to give to her.
She can't not know. And so she'll be like, what did you get me? And then she'll ask a million questions. And I'm like, well, this is fun. I'll give you little hints. And then I give her three hints. And she's like, I already know what you got me. I'm like, busted.
So did I mention dark pools? I actually feel like there's a market for this. Like, what if you could have a dozen things that you would like, or you give me the criteria and we buy the gift for you.
Right.
And we don't tell you what it is either.
Yeah, there you go.
You know, it just has to meet the criteria. Goodness gracious.
Oh, my gosh.
All right, so Fed leaks, very plausible. Just how, I don't know.
Yeah. What's the next one?
I know, Matt's, you see, Matt's going to die.
I think I already did.
We're over here, and now you're going to hear Blake off screen. She's laughing about it, just... yeah, we're losing our cool in the studio, literally
well,
and metaphorically.
No, we can't lose our cool. It's like 700 degrees in here. There is no.
It's hot in here, but you know, it's mostly you guys. So, this one I'm going to ask you about.
All right.
There's this theory that there are zombie companies that really should probably just be gone.
Yeah.
But because they're large employers. The government is somehow keeping them on life support just because it doesn't want to deal with the loss of jobs.
Are we talking about, like, Chevrolet and GMC?
I'm not naming names. You're naming names.
I mean, I think that's got to be real, right? Like, Boeing. Boeing was arguably, like, a huge mess there for the longest time. Planes were coming down. Financials didn't look good. No matter what, I don't think the U.S. government wants Boeing to fail. That'd be a national security crisis.
I think it's funny. I think that I don't know if Boeing's a zombie company. I just think that Boeing has lost its way. But see, that's the difference of nuance. Like, is the government propping them up, or is the government?
Oh, I think they are. They're going to give them a bunch of contracts to build more planes to keep them afloat.
There's funny stuff to me about Boeing. I will admit that quality control is not what I would like to see, but this idea that you have flawless quality control is really, really challenging. There were two planes that went down, as I recall.
Whoa.
Two Boeing 737 Maxes, and then there was the Alaska flight that had a plugged door that came out. The plugged door, there were no fatalities or significant injuries. People were probably pretty shaken by it, but everybody made it, right? Inexcusable.
Right.
I'm not, you know, but I will also say in the, you know, tens of thousands of hours of flying, the safety record's pretty remarkable for most of these aircraft, because this is one of those where the FAA, which is a staggering bureaucracy, has still managed to put in place a really good set of checks and balances to keep planes in the air.
Yep.
Right? And the crashes of the 737 MAX, in both cases, while there was a runaway trim problem, it was a pilot error problem, because all you really had to do was turn off the automatic trim and fly the airplane.
Right.
Which is like the basics of pilot training. But that was, you know, there were other things at play that led to that issue. All that to say, you know, is the government propping up Boeing? I would say yes.
Somewhat.
I think it's plausible. Because Consider like Elon Musk had to say, all right, fine, we will take somebody up to space to get these astronauts home.
Yep.
Because Boeing, you guys said you had this thing covered. You've blown the budget. You've blown the timing. Like, you've blown all of it. And you just can't get your act together.
I look at Intel kind of in the same light, right?
Yeah.
Because Intel, you look at the share price going way down, lagging significantly on innovation compared to NVIDIA. And then what does the government do?
Government contract, and then they still lay a bunch of people off.
Yeah.
And you're like, Intel, yeah. So, plausible.
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 I think that if you get... And what about all the companies that aren't so public, right? There's got to be some that they're propping up.
I think there's probably fewer of those, but anything that's got significant government contracts, there is the issue, right?
Yeah.
But I also think a lot of these companies start to really grow because they get government contracts, and government contracts are oftentimes sort of designed so that only that company can do it.
Do you think some of it is to make the unemployment numbers look better than they are?
Oh, this one's so fun. Can I throw rocks at politicians for just a minute?
You can just take a dump truck and unload on them.
Okay, well, we're going to do it. Let's take our last break.
Right.
You guys, stick around. If you want me to throw rocks at politicians,
no,
I'm going
to
do it.
I want you to get a dump truck.
When we come
out
back. All right, dump truck
them.
Of rocks.
Bury them.
We're going to talk about jobs and manipulation. Stick around. We'll be back. I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
And you got True Wealth on News Radio 92.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Hey, gang, welcome back to the home stretch of the True Wealth Radio Show, where we are playing Fact or Crap with Matt.
Yep. And so far, it's a lot of the latter.
Yeah. Now, we're covering market conspiracies, and I said at the break, we're going to throw some rocks at politicians here. And I'm trying to remember what it was around.
Milkshakes.
You can stop. It was around jobs.
Ah.
Right? And this is something that does kind of frustrate me as somebody in the private sector. You know, do I have a dog in this fight? 100% I do. 100%. Because as somebody that is an employer and is looking at the landscape of attracting employees to our firm, one of the things that drives me crazy is that what we saw, particularly in the previous administration, was a creation of a bunch of government jobs. And the question is, well, why would you do such a thing? And the answer is because it stimulates GDP. Because the debt is not factored into the GDP, but job creation is. And so, oh, well, we'll create jobs, and then the government can deficit spend, and then people will have money to put into the economy, and so that will be stimulative to gross domestic product. But it is manipulation, right? Because the government creating jobs has to find the money from taxes somewhere, right? And ultimately, private sector has to be able to do that. Well, now the private sector is competing with the government for employees, which tightens the labor market, which makes everything more expensive, right? So it's inflationary in nature, and a lot of the time it's unnecessary. And this is not just the prior administration. Lots of times this is gaming the system. And the challenge is that when you get people into jobs where there's a public employee union, oftentimes, once you sort of reach the equivalent of tenure or union protection, it's very hard to get people out of those positions if they are just marginal, right? You know, maybe they're not terrible, but they're not necessarily the best and the brightest. But the problem is it still drives the wage base up everywhere. That's inflationary in nature. So what do? You pressure the small businesses every time you do this. You pressure the labor market when you have this behavior. So will I throw rocks? Darn Skippy, I will, because it pisses me off that we're essentially manipulating the labor curve, right? Which makes everything more expensive. It's not solving problems. It's manipulating the circumstance, right? Oh, the person that can print the money can conjure jobs that aren't particularly real just to game economic figures. That's a load of nonsense.
Sounds like, right? A vote buy.
Yeah, well, that really is. It's like, well, is that a conspiracy theory? It's like, maybe so. And, you know, but I'm showing you the data.
Yeah.
Drives me nuts.
Okay.
All right.
Now I got one favorite. More. Yeah, milkshakes.
Of course you do. The one I've actually never heard of before. It's crazy.
This is called the dollar milkshake theory.
Okay.
All right. So basically, the U.S. is engineering different, like, you know, crises all over the place that then drive money back to the dollar. And so it's a way to suppress, you know, like the euro or other currencies.
Have you ever heard of Occam's razor?
Nope.
Okay.
I think you made that up.
Great.
Okay.
By all means, Google it later. Occam's razor is the theory that whatever is the simplest explanation is the most probably true.
Okay.
I think that the dollar milkshake theory misses one key thing, and that is the law of unintended consequences and what happens when people do things that are excessive or just plain dumb.
Explain.
So oftentimes a crisis is created not because it was intentional, but like the 2008 crisis, was that created or was that a bunch of stupid policy when about the time that home ownership was on the rise, the government actually instructed banks to lower lending requirements and to allow for no documentation in lending?
Well, that,
so that people
yeah.
could get overextended.
We know for like that was just bad policy, right?
Okay, so was that engineered to do that then?
No.
Okay.
So I think it's talking about smaller things where we go to another country and create a crisis in another country that then, you know, makes our currency more valuable.
See, I just can't think of a scenario where that it was sort of fits the narrative to me. But maybe with the benefit of hindsight and naivety, I'm not looking for it.
Maybe.
You know, I think that there have been times that we have gone into play. Like, let's talk about in the 90s with Desert Storm. Did we go in?
So that's kind of where I was going to go with this.
See, I think we went in because we had an interest in stabilizing the region, and it gave us an excuse to put troops on the ground and stay present.
I think in most of these, there's a lot of reasons, right? Like you said, we wanted to stabilize the region, and we knew that we would then be spending a bunch of money on our military.
But
which
see, somebody's screaming right now, it was about oil, to which I would say probably so.
Right.
Stabilize the region is the air quotes thing to say, keep oil prices stable, which also happen to be dollar denominated around most of the world. So it, you know, plausible. Yeah. Yeah. But more, again, it comes back to, are we self-interested? Yeah, I think we're self-interested, and so sometimes we have to package things so that it works out that way. And so I guess maybe the dollar milkshake is true, depending on how you want to nuance the definition.
I guess. This was a lot for our listeners. What's the big takeaway here, David?
Fun show to throw rocks and talk about kooky stuff.
But okay, what if someone wants a financial advisor that they're like, you know what, we could talk conspiracy theories all day. I like these guys.
Yeah, that probably is us.
Okay.
I mean, if you guys want to talk shop about it, this stuff gets baked into the cake of what we do. We're happy to talk with you. So, Matt, how do they reach us if they don't have a favorite person already?
Yeah, why don't you shoot a text or call us at 541-375-0898.
Okay. So the other stuff, you can learn more about us. Go to our website. It's littlejohnfs.com, and you can do all the goodies there. But, yeah, looking at the clock, I guess it is time. Hard to believe how quick it went.
That was a quick show.
Thanks for tuning in, everybody. Until next time, I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
And you've been listening to True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.